This is the Drive and Dish Podcast, talking about NBA news, stats, and fantasy. To start it off, it's Tim Tompkins.
The San Antonio Spurs are the real-life equivalent of a sexy librarian.
Kevin Rayfuse.
The Cavaliers are like the kid that keeps dropping their ice cream, so you stop feeling bad after the first time.
And Justin Cousart.
A little life lesson here. If you're having questions in life, just think, would Swaggy P do it?
Let's go.
And joining us on the show today, really excited about it, and really excited for the Bucks that is as well, we have Mr. Brian Sampson on the show, a contributor with 16 wins a ring. He's also a co-expert of the fan-sided Minnesota Timberwolves site, Dunking with Wolves. You can find him on Twitter at BrianBall0. Mr. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Tim. I'm really excited to be on here as well.
So let me ask you a question. Obviously we're going to be talking a lot of Bucks today. That being said, the Minnesota Timberwolves, a lot of people had playoff expectations for them this year. How did it feel for you covering the Wolves and watching them get relatively close, especially on the end of the season, but not quite make it?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really up and down season because they started out really slow. I mean, they got behind the eight ball right away, and they were under 10 games under 500 almost a month and a half into the season. And so they really had to try to claw back from that and almost made a push there right after the All-Star break. They're playing some really good basketball. Eventually, they just couldn't do it. They don't have enough depth yet. I mean, I think they've done the hardest part of a rebuild, which is get those star players. But now they just need to fill in those pieces around those star players, which typically is a lot easier than finding those star players to begin with.
Are they going to re-sign Shabazz Muhammad?
You know, I actually wrote a piece about this a couple of weeks ago, and I don't think that they should. I mean, he doesn't fit well. They need spacing on the floor with Towns and Wiggins. I mean, neither one's a prolific outside shooter, and Shabazz Muhammad is not either. So they really need to bring in more outside shooters and space the floor. And Shabazz, he doesn't do much other than score. I mean, he'll get you 11 points a game, but other than that, he doesn't grab many rebounds. He doesn't pass the ball very well, and he's kind of stuck in between small forward and power forward. So I really think that they should not bring him back.
You remember that rumor, and I'm not sure how much of a rumor it was as much as it was just true, and I don't remember how it all ended out. So Brian, I'm hoping you can kind of help me out with it, but Shabazz Muhammad lying about his age on his college transcripts. Mm-hmm. How did that shake out? Is he actually older than people thought he was? Or
yeah, he's actually like a year or two older than they thought he was. Because in college or in high school, I think he actually graduated when he was 19 or 20 years old. And so if the scouts would have known that, they said they would have bumped him down in their recruiting level. Because he's just finishing up his fourth year in the league, and he's already, I think, 24 years old. And that's pretty old considering he only has 1 year of college underneath his belt.
And last Minnesota Timberwolves question for you. Are the Wolves better without Zach LaVine?
I don't know how you could say that. I wrote a piece with Hoops Habit, which is a fan-sided site as well, saying that they are. But in retrospect, I don't know how you can take one of your three best players off the court and be a better team without that guy. I mean, he definitely gave more opportunities to Andrew Wiggins and Karl Anthony Towns with him not being on the floor. But when you don't have anyone else who can score the ball like he can, he was averaging, I think he ended up 18.9 points per game. So I really think the Wolves are better off with him on the floor than without.
Yeah, I guess my only caveat to that would be I feel like Ricky Rubio is so much better when he's not splitting the ball handling duties with Zach LaVine.
They actually took away some of that ball handling duties this year from LaVine. In the past, they tried him at point guard, thinking that was his natural position. But this year, they really went a lot more with him playing off the ball. And I think that's why we saw those jump in numbers.
So the Bucks heading into the postseason, 3-6, I think for part of the season, they weren't even, they weren't even in the playoff picture for a portion of it. They ended up closing out really strong, 20-10 in their last 30, I believe, going against a Raptors team that seems to have their number 13-2 over the last 15 games. How are the Bucks feeling as they head into the postseason against this Raptors club?
They really have a mixed bag of emotions going on right now. Giannis Antetokounmpo, he's really playing well. I mean, he's played well all season, and they are coming off a good stretch in March where they jumped up the standings really quickly. I mean, it's easy to do in the East given the teams that were in front of them. They all kind of slipped, and the Bucks were playing well. But over this last couple of weeks, they've really have fallen back down to earth, and I think that's more of what we might see in the playoffs from them. Chris Middleton and Greg Monroe, who were supposed to be two of their three best players with Jabari Parker out, have really, really struggled here in the last couple of weeks. And Middleton's struggles even go back farther than that. So those two really need to come around. And that's kind of what where the hesitation comes from Milwaukee Bucks fans is we've seen Monroe and Middleton struggle, and we know that they can't keep on struggling if the Bucks want to win this series against the Raptors.
Well, so Chris Middleton, he's playing, what, about 38 minutes a game since he's come back from that hamstring injury?
He's playing quite a few. I'm looking at the stats here, and it looks like he ended up averaging 30 minutes on the year, but I know a lot of that was from, or the number's a lot lower because he had those minutes restrictions for the first few weeks when he came back.
Are the Bucks worried at all because it's a hamstring injury, and you know you have brought up, Brian, that he's kind of slipped over the past couple of weeks? Are the Bucks worried at all about his health and his productivity as they face this Raptors club?
They're not worried about his health at all. I think it's kind of to be expected is as he gets more minutes, he's going to need to keep getting his legs underneath him. I mean, he injured his hamstring back in September, so there was a good 5 months or so where he wasn't in basketball shape. And so I think that's part of it. As his minutes were increasing and he was playing on a nightly basis, because at first they were sitting him on back-to-backs, and now we're just seeing some of the repercussion of him trying to get his hamstring and get his legs back to where they should be. And so I don't think they're worried about him at all in that respect, because he's already shown this year that he can return to his form of last year where he was the Bucks' best player all season long.
Speaking of the Bucks' best player, Giannis Antetokounmpo, 42 minutes a game. Heading into the postseason, you generally see some players whose minutes decline and some players whose minutes increase. What can we expect out of Giannis on this playoff run?
I think we can expect a little bit of everything. He ended up leading the Bucks in every single category there is. I mean, points, rebounds, assists, steals, blocks. He led the Bucks, and he can do everything. He struggles in the half-court offense, so I'd look for the Bucks to get out and try to run on the Raptors. They don't want to have to rely on their half-court offense to get points. They want to get out there and get the ball into Giannis's hands right away and let him make some plays. And I would look for him to be really aggressive. He's only played in the postseason one time, and that was, I think, his rookie year or his second year in the league against the Bulls. And he really got handled by Jimmy Butler. I remember vividly in my mind, Jimmy Butler telling him, "I clamped you down, I'm clamping you down." And so that's kind of Giannis's only experience in the playoffs. So I'd be looking for him to come out of the gate being aggressive, maybe seeing a couple of his stink faces off a nice plays, and for him just to have an impact on the boards, dishing it to his teammates, and on the defensive end too. I mean, he did end up averaging close to two blocks and two steals a game.
On the offensive end, you just mentioned how Jimmy Butler kind of shut him down the last time he was in the playoffs. Going against a Raptors club that has a lot of weapons that they can throw at Giannis, whether that's PJ Tucker, Damari Carroll, maybe even Ibaka for stretches of time, are there particular types of defenders that Giannis has an easier time or even a harder time against?
I think the quicker defenders who have a little bit of height, like the Jimmy Butler who have that little bit of height, can give him a hard time. And those defenders who can be more physical with Giannis, he's still working on developing his muscle strength. You can see how far he's come, but he's not quite there yet. So some of those defenders who can bother him with a little bit of their length and not let him bully them down low, because Giannis has developed his game to the point where he likes to attack the paint and he likes to work on some post-ups and use his body and Giannis's length to get some of those buckets. So somebody like maybe a PJ Tucker who can fight back and push back a little bit when Giannis is trying to attack the paint. Cause we all know in playoff basketball, the refs let a lot more go than they do in the regular season. And the intensity really steps up.
One of the great things about Giannis is that, as far as a team goes with the Bucks, that him and Malcolm Brogdon are both some of the more efficient scorers in the fourth quarter, which kind of bodes well to maybe him seeing an increased amount of minutes because hopefully his production's not going to go down. It doesn't seem to, at least during the regular season. That being said, when do you think Jason Kidd's going to be able to find rest for Giannis throughout the game?
typically what he's done is he's kind of staggered Antetokounmpo's minutes with Chris Middleton. So making sure that one of those guys is on the floor at all times. So I would look for Giannis to come out actually probably midway through the first quarter or so for a few minutes, just a short break, and then come back in the first quarter and finish it out, maybe even all the way through to the half. And because I know he really likes to stagger and always have one of those two best players on the floor. So I would really look for him to bring Antetokounmpo out in the middle of the first and third quarters for a few minutes, and then maybe to start the fourth quarter in the second quarter.
Talk to me about the best non-Giannis lineup that the Bucks will have, as they face up against the Raptors.
That's going to be their biggest problem. I would put Monroe at center, and then, you know, it just depends on who's hitting shot. I almost go Monroe, Toledovich, Snell, Middleton, and Brogdon is the best non-Giannis lineup.
As far as Jason Terry and Dele, for some reason, so they played, what, about 530 minutes together over the course of a season. For some reason, they have a positive net rating over that time, which I personally don't really understand. Is having them on the court for extended amounts of time together in this postseason run, is that something that's doable against this Raptors club?
It's going to be tough. I think it's going to depend on who the Raptors have on the floor. If the Raptors go with Laurie and like Norman Powell or some of those other smaller guards, then I think it definitely is doable. You want to try to hide Jason Terry on the defensive end because he's not much of a attribute there. He really can knock down the shots on the offensive side, but in defense you want to try to hide him as much as possible. So I think it really depends on if the Raptors are going to roll with like a Laurie and Corey Joseph lineup, or what they're going to do, because you wouldn't want Jason Terry to be on the court trying to guard DeRozan, obviously.
No, that's that would be a bit of a nightmare for him. I want to take a little bit of an introspective look on the Bucks really quick before we take it back to the postseason. Talking about Malcolm Brogdon, the steal of the draft, I think, probably everyone can say. A lot of people, though, they're picking Dario Saric as the rookie of the year. To me, it's all Malcolm Brogdon. I watch that kid play, and a lot of people are like, yeah, but he doesn't score all that many points. Watch that kid play. He is a starting caliber point guard. That being said, this postseason right here, it's his first run, and they're going to be most likely starting a rookie point guard. What can we expect out of him during the postseason? And also, what has made him such a good pairing with Giannis on the court?
Well, Brogdon, I mean, Milwaukee fans just love him to begin with. And I think the biggest thing that sticks out is, even though he's a rookie, he doesn't play or act like a rookie. I mean, he had 5 years at Virginia, and he's very mature. You listen to him talk in the locker room, you watch him just take over leadership on the floor. He really does not play or act like a rookie. So that's the biggest thing that just jumps out right away. And Brogdon, you're right, he can score when he wants to. He took over that game against the Celtics a couple weeks ago at Boston, actually, and kept the Bucks in the lead. And the Milwaukee actually ended up winning the game in Boston. And so that was really where Brogdon took over when other players weren't able to. I think part of what makes him and Giannis work so well together is, first, Brogdon's a great defender. He's not as quick, but he's a lot stronger than a lot of point guards in the league already. And at 6'4", 6'5", he can use his length to bother some of those shorter point guards or any ball handler, really. And he has been hitting his outside shots, which has been a really good surprise. He can spread the floor, and the Bucks need as much floor spacing as they can get. Giannis likes those lanes to be able to drive, and Malcolm can stand out on the three-point line and make sure that his guy doesn't sink. And if his guy is going to sink or help on a drive, then Brogdon has the ability to knock down that open jumper.
Whoa, I'm looking at Basketball Reference right here. I did not realize this. Malcolm Brogdon, he is shooting 40.5% from behind the three-point arc this season.
Yeah, it's not always pretty, and it's not always doesn't always look the best, but it goes in, and he can even take it off the dribble, especially on a high ball screen, and knock it down. So he's been pretty impressive.
What's made Jason Kidd so successful with this Bucks club as opposed to the Knicks?
Well, I mean, I think that's a relative question. A lot of Bucks fans actually hate Jason Kidd and want him fired.
Do they really?
Oh yeah, you should see all the Twitter handles that say "fire kid, fire kid." They don't want anything to do with the guy.
I didn't know that.
It's pretty surprising considering all of the things that he brings to Milwaukee. But I mean, his defense has really a lot of that I don't know if hate's the right word, dislike maybe towards Jason Kidd has been his defense. His first year in Milwaukee, he brought this defense, and the Bucks were top five in turnovers against, in points allowed. They were really doing a good job, and he hasn't evolved his defense even as other teams have adapted to it. So you're probably seeing this game, the Raptors swinging the ball around the perimeter and finding a lot of open shooters in the corners. That's really the way to beat him. And so he's made minor tweaks here to his defense the last couple of months, such as working with his players instead of making his players fit his scheme. Like Greg Monroe, he obviously, you don't want him out in the perimeter chasing around the ball. And so he's allowed Monroe to stay more closer to the lane and closer to his guy that way, and let the other four players on the court run around and chase the ball because they like to play that high pressure, kind of chaotic defense.
It's always interesting, I think, when you're talking about how to guard the 3-point line. So a lot of coaches seem to have this feeling that, we want to lower the amount of attempts, 3-point attempts that the other team makes, where other coaches say, no, we want to lower the percentage that the other team is making. You're looking at the Bucks this year, and they're allowing about 28 a game. That's good for 22nd in the league. However, they're keeping opponents to 35.5%. That's best for 10th in the league. What is Jason Kidd's approach to guarding the 3-point line?
He really wants his shooter, his defenders, to close out hard on the shooters. You'll see him flying out to the line and close out, and they want to drive that offensive player off of the line. They want to really make him put the ball on the floor and attack the paint. So they really, their defenders will fly out there often, overcommitting on their closeout and making the offensive player kick out off the 3-point line. So that's really how he does it. And a lot of his defense depends on the rotations too. I mean, the next guy's got to step up and take the open man who's receiving the pass. And so a lot of it is communication. You'll hear a lot of times the big man shouting or any of the guys on the court talking and trying to figure out who to get next, because they really rely on that pressure and their hard closeouts.
That's almost a little bit surprising, because your point, Brian, that means you have to really trust the guy manning the paint. But it seems like the rotation for center with the Bucks is kind of been a saloon door this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really have not found their guy to control the paint. They've actually relied on Giannis to do it. You'll see a lot of times Giannis will be matched up with maybe a more stationary offensive player, so that way he can come over and help. And they kind of use him as the center on their offense, because Monroe, he doesn't scare anyone driving to the paint. And Thonmaker, at this point in his career, he's really not strong enough to be able to defend the paint and plays out of control at times. So they'll use Giannis as their center on defense often and let him roam free and let him have that ability to go and try to block shots or alter the offensive player's shots.
Are we going to see any point center Giannis during this postseason?
Of course. You'll see him do a little bit of everything. I mean, he'll be bringing the ball up the court. He'll initiate plays. He'll be grabbing rebounds. He does a little bit of everything.
What happened with Terrence Jones?
You know, he just never really got an opportunity to play. And he came in after Beasley got hurt and played a couple of games, didn't do too well, but he never really got an opportunity to play. I don't know how well he fit our system. I don't know how much he was just a placeholder, and Jason Kidd never really gave him the opportunity to play. I mean, it's hard to say when he only appeared in a few games for the Bucks.
My worst year as a Phoenix Suns fan was the Michael Beasley year. I'll never forget that year. Him, Luis Scola, it was a really uninspiring, terrible basketball. I don't mind teams that don't win, but I don't want to watch a team that's not winning with vets that are really uninspirational. Michael Beasley, though, he seems like he's had a little bit of a turnaround this year, no?
Mm-hmm. He's playing amazing for the Bucks. I mean, Bucks fans, we love him, and we welcome him to the team. He's been different than in the past. I mean, you heard all these stories about in the past how he maybe is a little bit irresponsible, but that's been completely not the case in Milwaukee. And he's taken on a good leadership role for a lot of those younger guys to look up for, which is really different to say about Beasley. And on the court, he's had his moments. I mean, he likes to chuck the ball, and sometimes he'll have his inefficient night scoring, but for the most part, he's been doing his job, and he'll go games or go stretches where he won't play because of the front court depth that the Bucks have. But overall, he's been playing pretty well in Milwaukee.
What's his contract situation looking like? I don't know it off the top of my head.
I believe he's a free agent after this year.
Ooh. Any word if they're thinking about bringing him back?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll bring him back, but it's got to be on the right contract. I mean, you don't want to overpay for a guy who isn't going to play every single game for you, or the nights that he does play only gets 15 to 20 minutes. So I hope that they can bring him back if it's on the right contract.
One of the things we like to do is reach out to our listeners to see if they have a question for any of our guests. And so we have two of them today for you, Brian. One is from Ned O'Carter. You can find him on Twitter at NoCarter. And he asks you, Brian, do you expect Thonmaker to get playing time, or will Kidd rely heavy on the vets?
Thonmaker, he's going to play maybe 5 minutes to start the game, and then I don't know if we'll see him the rest of the time. I mean, it's kind of weird to say he'll get the start, play 5 minutes, and then he'll head to the bench, and Jason Kidd will rely on Greg Monroe mostly, even though he's been struggling mightily this year, and he has not played well against the Raptors at all this season. But then he'll also go with a little bit of John Henson or even Spencer Hawes at times.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. You know, some teams do that, though. It's all about who closes the game as opposed to who starts the game. Colin Stimp on Facebook asks, which team are you going to write about when the Bucks get swept?
Well, you know, I'll just have to figure it out then, but my prediction is Bucks in six.
Bucks in six? You are going with Bucks in six. Wow.
There's a nice story behind Bucks in six, and so it's all that's kind of Milwaukee Bucks fans, I don't know what the right word would be. Kind of it's what we rally around. I don't know if you remember back to a few years ago when the Bucks had Brandon Jennings and Monta Ellis, and they made the playoffs as the AC, maybe like 4 or 5 games under 500 or so. And then Brandon Jennings predicted the Bucks to beat the Heat in 6 games. So since then, that's kind of been Bucks fans' rallying cries: Bucks in 6.
Well, Mr. Brian, you just gave me the title of the episode: Bucks in 6. That's fantastic. Before I get you out of here, make the compelling argument to me, as well as a person listening through their headphones right now, how the Bucks are going to pull out a win in this series.
So for me, it all comes down to defense for the Milwaukee Bucks. I know a lot of people think that Toronto is not a good matchup for them, but I kind of see it differently. Toronto relies on a lot of isolation basketball. I think they actually something like 8.5 or 8.6% of their possessions are isolation. And as we talked about earlier, with Milwaukee's pressure defense, the weakness in their defense is when you rotate the ball. So Toronto isn't the best at that. They're also, I think, last in the league in assists per game. And so if Milwaukee can use some of those good perimeter defenders like Tony Snell and Chris Middleton that they have, I think they'll be able to slow down the Raptors, because Milwaukee has a size advantage at a lot of positions as well. I mean, you look at, they start 6'5", 6'6", 6'7", 6'11", and 7'1". And so I think that defense is really going to be the key for them. And then also on offense, it's going to be Chris Middleton and Greg Monroe. Can they come alive and break out of their slump? Chris Middleton's outside shooting is going to be huge. He can be the Bucks' best shooter, and they need to keep those driving lanes open for Giannis. I mean, in my opinion, Giannis is going to really have his coming out party, and he's going to dominate this series. It'll just be whether or not those other players around him can step up and help him.
I mean, the Bucks are, they've got to be the most lengthy team, I think, in the NBA right now. Out of all the teams with young core, and I think this is that you can speak to this probably better than a lot of people, because you cover both the Bucks and the Wolves, but if you were to bring in the Sixers, the Suns, the Mavs, maybe even to a certain extent the Lakers, out of all the teams with young core, which one do you think is going to win a championship first?
I think that's a tough question. I mean, to me, it would come down to, well, the 76ers, I mean, they are struggling with injuries and getting their guys to the plate. I mean, with Simmons and Embiid, those guys have hardly even seen the floor. The Suns, they have a nice piece in Devin Booker, who looks like he can just score at will, and he's only going to get better there. For me, I mean, it's going to come down to maybe between the Bucks and the Timberwolves, who can get those better pieces in around them. With Jabari, with the Bucks losing Jabari Parker, they took a major hit, because no one knows how he's going to be able to recover from a second ACL injury to that same left knee. So it's really going to come down to who can get those pieces in place. And I mean, I would be willing to bet at this point on the Milwaukee Bucks. Obviously, I'm biased, so I was going to say that. But Giannis can do things that no one else can do, and in this league has never seen before. He's he's the only player in NBA history to finish top 20 in points, rebounds, assists, blocks, and steals in one season. And so we've never seen that before. And the scary part is he's so raw still. You see him in games, he's so out of control a lot of the times, and he's only going to get better and better. And so I think the Bucks can, they have some of those pieces with Jabari, if he can come back, Chris Middleton, and I think they'll be able to take it from there.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the Jabari Parker injury, but, you know, shout out to Jabari Parker. I really do hope he comes back strong. Do you have anything that you are working on right now you want people to know about?
Right now, I'm actually working on a Giannis Antetokounmpo Most Improved Player Award piece because he won it for the 16 Windsor ring. He won it going away, and so I'm writing about why he deserved to win it, and I'm basically just making love with him on the paper for everyone to see, just throwing all his stuff out there.
Did Malcolm Brogdon get Rookie of the Year?
No, he lost to Saric. I don't know how that happened, but it was a close one. I was just looking at it before I came on. I think only lost by a few points.
It is a close one. You got to give it to Brogdon, man. Either way, he's in the conversation, so I think that bodes really well for the Bucks having the Rookie of the Year, or at least close to the Rookie of the Year, as well as the Most Improved Player. Well, Mr. Brian Sampson, you can follow him anytime by going over to 16 Wins Ring. As we said before, he's also a contributor and co-expert at the fan-sided Minnesota Timberwolves site, Dunking with Wolves. And you can follow Brian on Twitter at BrianBall0. Again, that's BrianBall0. Mr. Brian Sampson, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was an honor.
Phoenix fans, say it with me. We are PHX. We are PHX. I want you to check out a brand new Phoenix Suns podcast called The Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns podcast. Tim Tompkins, Greg Esposito, Dave King for a weekly Phoenix Suns podcast. You can find The Solar Panel, Phoenix Suns podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, and sunspodcast.com. We are PHX. We are PHX.
I think we've done enough dancing for today. So why don't we dance Wednesday?
See you, Starside.
Okay, well, I'm out of here.
Get in the hole!
Da, 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 da. Hey! Da, 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 da. Da, 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 da. Hey!
Let's go while we're young!
All right, I think they get the point.